Quick warning before we get into the celebrations. There can be some swear words and adult concepts in these episodes, so make sure there's no kids around and maybe pop on some headphones. Rights for Women would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land upon which this podcast is recorded throughout Australia. We recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We recognise that sovereignty has never been ceded and pay respects to elders past, present and emerging.
Welcome to the Rights for Women Book Launch Podcast. I'm Pamela Cook, author, podcaster, and writing coach and mentor. My latest release, Cross My Heart, is a story about an orphan child, a lifelong friendship, and an impossible promise, now available at online retailers and through my website at pamelacook.com.au.
And I'm Kel from Rights for Women, the other half. I'm a podcaster and wannabe author. My business is Listen Up Podcasting, and we make podcasts for a positive world, like this one. You can find me at www.listenuppodcasting.com.au or catch me on Facebook or Twitter.
As many of you will know, with the advent of coronavirus and lockdowns, authors with new releases have been unable to promote their books at live events. Here at Rights for Women, we want to help authors celebrate their new releases and help readers discover new books, all of which are available online, at retailers and through independent bookstores. We'll be releasing these mini-sode chats with authors regularly throughout the coming months while we're all in isolation and authors need a place to launch their books.
Please share the love by letting your reading friends know about the podcast and the books on social media and by reviewing any books you read to help authors get the word out. This is a great time to put some new books on your shelf, virtual and physical, and to share the gift of reading.
My name's Emma Ashmere and my new book is Dreams They Forgot. It's a short story collection. So I'm going to read from the story called The Second Wave, which is set in Adelaide in 1974. And that's a few weeks before a so-called tidal wave was going to apparently wipe out much of South Australia. It's about two sisters, Bevette and Flories, and they're holidaying at their relative's beach house, which is perched on a cliff. And they're wondering if the wave is actually going to come or not. So I'll start reading from the second wave. Every morning, Bevette and Flories escaped the house before their parents were up and walked along the sand to the regular tremor of waves. Sometimes the water was so clear you could see the frills of seaweed caught in the glassy elbow of the tide. In previous years, Vivette had christened these walks their morning explorations and set the task of finding the morning's most terrible thing washed up overnight, a dead sailor lolling in the tide, still trapped to the mast, or a pirate's chest full of bones and skulls. But this year, Vivette scuffed along the sand, staring out of the water, twisting her hair, or shooting an imaginary gun at the squawking gulls. Flories discovered a crabless carapace and a spiral shark egg case. She splashed about in the rock pools and found a comb tangled with strands of long brown hair. She had visions of an elegant woman attending to her tresses in the moonlight, or a mermaid singing to the dolphins at dawn. "That's foul," said Bevette when she showed it to her. "Whose do you think it was?" said Flories. "Some lady who got drunk and fell off a yacht, or somebody gave her the shove." Now Mr. Mortimer from next door had begun his dawn patrol in his singlet, shorts and sun-scabbed legs, waving his magnet across the sand. Bevette claimed the vibrations came up through her feet and upset her biorhythms. "That thing sounds like a UFO," she said, and stalked back up to the house. Flories raced after her. Their mother was reversing out of the driveway. Bevette thumped her fists on the bonnet. "Stop, where are you going?" Their mother frowned. She was in those cat glasses, the ones her lipstick matched, and her new zebra-striped dress. "Oh, it's nothing, just to the city." "Take me too," cried Bevette. But the car raced off. Stones flicked up on the road. "It's because of Bloody Dad again," Bevette said, It always is. But Florise thought her mother wanted to escape the tidal wave.
Wow, it's really powerful. And that whole image of the tidal wave and the setting on the beach, it's very evocative.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Before we get on to talking about the collection, could you tell us a little bit, Emma, about your sort of writing history and how you came to be where you are now with a new collection of short stories coming out?
Sure. I'd always wanted to be a writer, you know, but like you do and some people do when they're young. And I travelled a bit in my 20s, which is back in the 80s now, and sometimes someone would lend me a typewriter and I'd set it up on my end of my bed or wherever and think, I just don't really know what I'm doing. I want to do this, but I had no idea where to start. And then I came back to Adelaide, where I'm from originally, and in the late 90s, there was an MA offered at the University of Adelaide in creative writing. And it was only the second year they'd started. It was all a bit brand new and some people were still thinking, is this a real degree? And that sort of thing was happening. And I'd done a lot of things and a lot of pretty difficult jobs, working as a cook in fairly long hours and hard scrabble work and office jobs and things. And I remember going to that class and thinking, I want to do every single exercise they're setting me. I want to read every book and I want to do every assignment. It was the first time ever that I thought, oh, wow, I think I'm where I'm meant to be. So that was how that formal side started. Yeah.
Okay. So that was a while ago and you completed your degree and yeah. You continued obviously writing since then. Yeah. And is this your first like published collection of stories or you've had other things published?
I've had a novel before, so I'll just say in that MA we started writing short stories just as an assignment and it was just great to have a deadline and it was great to, I had like over 30 years just poured out onto the page and it was quite easy, wow. I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it got harder because, you know, I started thinking, oh, actually, I don't know what I'm doing. And over those years I just started sending out stories and now and then one would get picked up. And that was like, wow, okay. And then, you know, life happened in and out. But I always kept writing short stories. And I ended up going on to do a PhD. And I did a novel for that. And out of that PhD, that novel eventually got published in 2015.
Okay.
And that's called The Floating Garden. So that was a long genesis, but it got there. Yeah. And you know, and in the meantime, I was publishing short stories as well. So sometimes it might be a chapter from the novel that just never worked.
Right.
And it might be a short story. So I like to think nothing's ever wasted. I mean, you waste a lot of time, but sometimes you can just reuse something or pick it up.
Yeah, for sure. And so after having written, you know, you've written short stories for quite some time and then did the novel with your PhD, how different was that writing a longer form to a short story?
Yeah, well, I had done a novel for the MA, which never got out there, you know. And so I really loved the idea of the long form and I love history. And so often I was writing things. So the novel, The Floating Garden, was set in 1926. And was about the people who were evicted for the building of the Harbour Bridge.
Oh,
so that,
great.
Yeah, so because a friend of mine's grandmother's house got wiped out and she told me that one day and I thought, oh, I think there's a story there.
Yeah.
And so I think giving me something really to go into and to research for a longer piece. So I've written sort of three manuscripts and one's been published and that they actually are, the novel ones are historical, and some of my short stories are set in the past as well, and some are contemporary. So, yeah.
Yeah, and what draws you to the short story form? What do you love about it?
Well, A, that you can probably get it finished.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes you can.
A built-in deadline, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, it's sort of a bit quicker on the instant gratification. I mean, you never know what's going to happen with what you're writing. And sometimes it's great not to think about that at all, but sometimes you can't not. And look, I like it's just a moment. And, I mean, I've done some really short, like, flash fictions, which can be, like, you know, 100 words. And sometimes, and I actually did an 8-word one that ended up on a billboard in Sydney. It was part of the Queensland Writers' Centre. So that was
I remember funny. That. I remember those wild, like, billboard ones going up.
And so I quite like the idea of testing yourself and saying, well, I've got to write something compelling or that someone might think is interesting in X words, you know, 50 words, 8 words, 2,000 words. And sometimes I think that limit can give you a freedom in a strange way. You sort of have to, I don't know, do you write short as well as long? Or?
I've written some short stories. I find them really difficult. I love to read them, and I love the way that great short story writers capture those moments. You know, I just think it's such a skill. I just get carried away with the story and the characters, and I just want to write more. You know, I'm not very good at containing it, but I do think it's an absolutely brilliant form. I love it.
I know what you mean. And sometimes my stories will sit there for, you know, even years. And I think, well, I was totally going off on some random path there that doesn't need to be in. And, or sometimes, and I say to people with like competitions and journals, if there's a theme, you know, like they might do it about, I don't know, rain or, I don't know, something, hope or something.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can think, well, actually, I've got that in a short story and I might be able to cut off that other bit that's talking about, I don't know, buses and, you know, or frogs, I don't know. And is it really necessary, you know? So there is an argument. Yeah. And there is an argument about if you can learn to prune things down for short stories, it helps your longer writing. I'm not sure they've got there yet, but it's a nice idea.
Probably definitely helps your revision, I think, and your editing skills. So let's get on to this collection. So it's been described as a part history and part imagination. And you said, you know, in your intro that you love to use historical snippets. And the story that you read the excerpt from was based on this possibility of a tidal wave hitting Adelaide.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about the collection and the sorts of stories that are in it, the sorts of historical snippets that you've used to spark the stories themselves?
Yeah, sure. I mean, often it will resonate with something that's happening now. So with that second wave one, I actually wrote that in the 90s, and I remembered this tidal wave that was meant to come. And it wasn't until after I wrote it that I actually thought, I'll look that up. And, in fact, the politics behind that was a man had predicted it. He's a house painter that lived on the coast, and there was going to be a tidal wave and an earthquake. And it was apparently because they just decriminalised homosexuality in South Australia. And so he thought that the sinners, some of whom fitted in that category, you know, this was going to be the answer. So, right. Yeah, so I was completely shocked and just blown away that I either didn't know that when I was young. I mean, I was really quite young, but or did I not remember it all?
Mm.
So, and so then you start realising that this sort of quite light story had this huge undertone, and really I just see that history is the politics of yesterday, really. And so that's one story, and it's really about two sisters and one being a bit older and moving away. And I wanted to explore that moment when one of the younger siblings sort of wants the older sibling to still be drawn back into their childhood, and the other one's off with other horizons, you know.
Yeah.
And so in these collections, I've set one in like a contemporary hospital, but they also visit Cook's Cottage in Melbourne. So there's a bit of history there, and that's called Standing Up, Lying Down. And that was pretty much based on my experiences of developing a illness that made me stop being able to walk without a walking stick for a couple of years. So I used that. It took me about 15 years to write that story, I have to say. It was one of the hardest to write.
And well, because it's so close to you, I guess, like when you're writing, you know, based on your own experience, you're really drawing on those emotions that you felt yourself.
And I think some people probably write really clearly and well about that stuff as memoir, and I just can't. and so in the end, that came out as about rights of people with disabilities. You know, so there's something underneath it. And it wasn't until I connected with a woman who's Nicola Griffiths, who's an American disability activist and writer, and she told me how I should have been treated in the workplace as opposed to what happened. And so that sort of allowed me to think, oh, I can write this story because it's not just about me, it's about the broader issue.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe it will help someone. And then there's other sort of stories. One that's set in the Great Depression, and that's really interesting now because I'm thinking, you know, people are facing economic stuff now that maybe we didn't think was going to happen. And I'm just looking at another one. There's one about climate change, so a family living isolated now, and I was sort of looking out the window. I live in northern New South Wales where it's usually green, and it was going yellow, dry last year, and there were fires around this time last year. And then I'd read somewhere that a writer in America said, all writers should start writing about climate change. I thought, well, okay, I'll do one.
Yeah.
And that, you know, ended up being picked up for the Newcastle Writers Competition, Newcastle Writers Centre. So,
okay,
again, it's like it might be history or it might just, you know, it might just coincide with a mass migration or some event. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a bit of a thread by the sounds of it, Emma, of outsiders or people, you know, sort of outside the mainstream, if you like, of society. And what do you think is that draws you to that writing about that group, if you like, of people or those people?
Yeah, well, I think it's sort of useful being an outsider as a writer because the world's maybe a little bit of a different tilt than the mainstream or the prevailing views. You might not really realise that until you realise that people react to your writing in a certain way. And I think it helps you just to have a sort of look through society a bit more. And, I've also did a bit of research assistant work while I was doing my PhD, and that was wonderful. So I was living in Melbourne and spent many long hours in the State Library wearing away on the microfilm as we had then. It was the project was looking for marginalised voices, so voices of women back in the 1890s, people of different backgrounds, cultural backgrounds, people of colour, First Nations people, and it's really hard to find. And poor women, that was really hard to find them on the historical record. And often they're in court, they're in court.
Right.
Because that's the only way they're recorded.
Yeah.
And then they're sort of ventriloquised. So they have some reporter saying, oh, the ugly old woman said X, Y, and they do the sort of accent thing. And, you know, it's really hard to think, who was this woman? Why did she really end up there? Or, you know, who was this Chinese market gardener and why did he end up there? I mean, it's really, so it's like a hunting expedition.
Yeah, for sure. Did you use a lot of ideas from that research in your writing?
Some of them are in the short stories, and I actually did, it's quite a long while ago, and I think I wiped some of the files by mistake, you know, as you do, the ones that you want to keep. And I did set one story called The Historic Present in the State Library, and it is about, you become quite attached to these little snippets, like, I found a letter that a woman wrote to a woman who is on death row, didn't see the answer. I only saw the two letters to her. So there's this huge, I mean, did the woman answer? I don't know. But and then a woman writing in her diary about the husband's been away for 6 months and she's got three kids and the cows are sick, and it's like, oh, wow, you know, in her handwriting. And I think it's about seeing the handwriting.
Makes it really real, doesn't it?
Little stains on the page or ink blot.
Yeah, that would be fascinating. It sounds like it would be a real rabbit hole too once you start to investigate some of those things.
And it's also sometimes a real shock to come outside into the modern world. So that's how you get really caught up, and you'd come out like bang into Swanson Street and everyone's on their mobile phones and there's trams and you're thinking, oh, hang on a minute. Then I'd see the tourist horse and cart go past. You think, hang on a minute. It's quite,
So with the characters in your stories for this collection, Were there any that sort of really jumped out at you and said, you have to write me first? You know, were they sort of all there standing there putting their hands up, and were some easier than others to write?
Yeah, and that's the one that was quite amazing. I'm working on a novel now, and part of it's set in Adelaide, and I've been researching and reading, and I'm sure that's how ideas come, really. The more you read and write. And this voice just snaked into my head. And she said, oh, my name is Irish Iris, and they say I have eyes everywhere. I thought, hang on, you're not in my story. What are you doing here? And it was a really strong voice, and it sounds a bit odd, but I thought, okay, I've been writing long enough to know if you get this, you've got to write it down.
Yeah, because it will go. Yeah, for sure.
And I just sat and wrote this story for about, I don't know, a couple of hours, and there it was. And I did end up sending it away to the Commonwealth Writers International Prize Short Story Award, and it got shortlisted.
Brilliant.
And that was completely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And I think it was because that was in 2019, it was shortlisted, and I'd been watching all those mass migrations across Europe, and this was about an Irish immigrant who came to Adelaide in the 1860s.
Mm.
And when she got there, it wasn't what she'd been promised.
Mm.
And I was thinking about watching the news every night and seeing people walking across train tracks across Europe and carrying their baggage and their loved ones. And I thought, wow, you know, it's so that was one. But, and I only had one other, which was after September 11, which arrived straight away. So it's 2 in 20 years, so I don't think
I'm... Yeah.
And that was about the war, and I was thinking, I came from a house where my father had been in the Second World War, and that was very haunting and damaging. And I think it made me think, oh, I don't really want another generation to have to go through this.
Mm.
And that story just fell out on the page, and that got picked up in the Age short story competition. So it's amazing. They're probably the pure ones that you don't muck around with. They just sort of. But I don't know. I think there's something percolating in the brain. I think it's all mysterious. There's a lot that doesn't work.
Yeah, but when it works like that, it's absolute gold, isn't it?
Yeah, it's rare.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Do you ever have that moment of, I've got to write that down?
Some, very rarely, and I've only had it, like, I've written five, I'm on my sixth novel, and I've only had it with one novel where I, and as you, the point you made about researching and reading, I think is really important, because I had this contract, I had to write a book, and I really didn't know what I was going to write, and I sort of had a vague idea, and I started just doing research, and little bits of research from one thing would trigger research on something else. Yep. And then I just went to bed one night, and somehow my brain just created this story idea. I made myself, I was in that half waking, half sleep thing. I made myself write it down, and when I looked at it in the morning, I looked at it and went, oh wow, that could actually work. And it did become the book, you know, it became the plot for the book. So, but it's only been once. I keep hoping it'll happen again.
See, and but I've heard too that moment, that sort of silvery moment between awake and asleep, is the moment where I think there's something about your brain is relaxed, but you're awake enough to think, hang on, that's not me worrying about the whatever it is, electricity bill. Yeah. It's actually something beautiful. Yeah. And did the end up with that plot actually end up being pretty much what was there?
Exactly. Wow. I mean, obviously fleshed out. I actually sent the idea that I'd written down, I typed it out and sent it to my publisher the next day and said, what about this? And she just typed back, I still remember, I love it. And and that became the plot for the book, just fleshed out. Three characters, how they were related, what the central sort of idea of the story was. It was amazing that it just came like that. But it's from that point you made about doing the research and doing the reading and just, I think just letting those ideas percolate, not trying to force it one way or the other, you know, if you've got the time, obviously, to do that or the, you know.
I know. Yeah. And I think it's also, I don't know if you've thought this, but I think sometimes it's about making connections you wouldn't necessarily in your waking moment. So there might be something you've seen and then suddenly that ends up being in the story and you think, oh, I wouldn't have thought. Yeah, I don't know why. Someone calls them free rides, but I don't think they're free because I think you are percolating something.
Yeah.
You have to put in input.
Absolutely. You've got to fill the well, yeah.
Mm, yeah.
So Emma, your stories sound like they've got this really historical thread, but things that are very relevant to contemporary times and to, you know, current events. Is that something that sort of deliberately happens? Or do you deliberately do that, or that's just part of your process in terms of writing the story?
Well, I think I heard someone the other day saying that you know what your story is about after you've written it. And I think some of them I've felt like that. So like that second wave one, I really didn't remember what the sinister thing underneath was about the predicted wave. And so I don't deliberately think, oh, I'm going to write a political story or I'm going to hook it to this event. Sometimes it can be quite light. But you can also, I think it's about getting the feeling. So with, say, the second wave, it was about the feeling. And with, so that's only in the 70s, and there's a contemporary one I did about a woman who faces subtle homophobia at a family gathering. Right. And it's that sort of thing of, it wasn't really that political, it's just a feeling. So if I can get that feeling sometimes, and if it's set back in the past, like in a music hall and in the 1860s Adelaide, obviously I wasn't there, but I know that feeling of displacement or disappointment or fear or how am I going to survive or whatever it is. And maybe that's more stronger for me, is trying to get a voice and a mood or...
Yeah, for sure. And that's really important to the reader connecting to the story as well, isn't it?
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. So how many stories are in this collection?
Okay, there's 23. Okay. And, it was an interesting process to... I was actually labouring around this novel, that which may never be finished. And I said to my agent, look, I think I've got enough stories for a collection. What do you think? And, you know, the usual, they're very hard to sell, blah, blah. And we thought, well, why not? Mm. And then, of course, I realised that when I put them all in one document, there were some repetitions, and obviously I've been banging on about the same old thing in some of the stories. But, you know, nobody noticed because they were going to X Journal and Y competition. You know?
Yeah, they went up together.
I've used that phrase about four times, you know. So it was a bit of a cull, and that was really interesting.
Mm.
And some of them were really old, so I was like, oh, I don't remember writing that.
Did I really write that?
Yeah. And it was really lovely to put them in a document, and I was just so thrilled when Maple Press picked it up. Like, apparently they like the mix of imagination and history. So, and they're based in Adelaide, and I'm from Adelaide, and a couple of the stories in Adelaide, but they're also in, like, London, Indonesia.
Where would people be able to find the book, Emma?
Yes, so Wakefield Press has it, obviously, and also the major big stores like Booktopia, Book Depository, Amazon, and also the wonderful independent bookstores, Readings, Avid Reader, Riverbend Books, Imprints in Adelaide.
And is it available as an ebook as well?
Yes, it is. So you can get ebook or paperback. Yeah. Mm.
And that's great for, particularly I think for short stories, you know, for people that read on Kindles, and some people, a lot of people now reading on their phone. You know, short stories are a great thing to read, you know, because they don't take as long as a full novel. You can read it in one sitting.
You don't have to commit to it. I mean, and I say, if you get interrupted, you think, well, hang on, who was doing what? It doesn't actually matter. You can come come back and re-engage. And I mean, I quite like reading one just in the morning before I write. I might turn to somebody fantastic like Ali Smith or Janet Frame or Catherine Mansfield or Tara June Winch and just read what they've done. And it's a really lovely way before you write just to read a small section of someone else's writing.
Yeah, I sometimes do that for inspiration too. If I get stuck, I think I just need to get my head in. It's not that you're copying or mimicking or anything. It's just getting your head into that creative space.
Yeah, it's lovely. Yeah. And poetry is lovely like that too, I think.
Beautiful. Yeah. It's been so lovely chatting to you, Emma.
Well,
Before I let you go, could you tell us what you're reading at the moment? Have you got any reading recommendations for us?
Well, I've just read Benevolence by Julie Jansen. And she's an Australian First Nations writer, And she wrote that book in response to Kate Grenville's The Secret River.
Oh, okay. And
I've just read Kate Grenville's new one, A Room of Leaves, A Room yep. Made of Leaves. And then I read Julie Jansen's book, and it's really wonderful, really immersive, and it's set back in the era of the frontier wars. And it's just a really immersive, important book and really interesting to read the Kate Grenville's and then Julie Jansen's.
Oh, right. I loved The Secret River. I'm just writing that title down. It's Benevolence, yep. Benevolence. Can really find it.
Mm. Magabala, of course, who do Dark Emu and all those wonderful books.
Okay, yep.
And what else? In short stories, I just read Elizabeth Tan's Smart Ovens for Lonely People.
Oh, great title.
A wild book. She's a Perth writer and it's pretty, it takes you into various worlds. Technology and things, and that's a brand new short story collection. So that's another fantastic one to watch out for. Yeah.
Good luck with the collection and wish you all the best with it. It sounds fantastic.
Thanks so much. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Book Launch and supporting our authors. If you like what you hear, check us out at rightsforwomen.com where you can find all our regular episodes and our new book launch episodes, and help us help authors by supporting us at Patreon for just a few dollars each month. You can find out more about all of this on our website.
And don't forget to subscribe to Rights for Women wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, can you please give us a quick rating and review so other people can find us and these awesome books that authors are launching in isolation right now.
Happy reading.
This podcast episode was recorded, produced and edited by Kel Butler from Listen Up Podcasting. Podcasts for a positive world.